Hi, I'm Karine Black, and you're listening to The Talking Space, where you will find interviews about therapy and all things related. In this episode, Albertina Fisher, who is a psychosexual and relationship therapist, talks with me about psychosexual and relationship therapy, what it is, a couple of examples of issues brought to psychosexual therapy, how Albertina works with her clients, and what happens in a session. Sit back and enjoy. Hi, I'm Karine Black, and I'm here today with Albertina Fisher, who is a psychosexual and relationship therapist. Did I get that right?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm happy with that title.
Good. Now, can you tell me a little bit about what it is that a psychosexual and relationship therapist actually does?
Sure. So as psychosexual relationship therapists, we help people with sexual issues or relationship issues, and it sort of does what it says on the tin, really, in that it is psychosexual therapy. So it means that we help people to overcome sexual difficulties from a psychological sort of perspective. So if you think about, there are obviously different ways of tackling issues, and in some cases people might have a sexual issue that needs a medical intervention. So that sets us apart from, you know, what we do, which is psychosexual. So we look at the psychological aspects of sexuality and sexual difficulties.
So would you work with people who perhaps are on medication for some kind of sexual issue?
I mean, there certainly is a little bit of medication out there, but not as much as you might think. There is not that much around when it comes to medication for sexual issues. The most well-known one, I guess, is Viagra for men who have erectile difficulties. But we certainly do work with people who might have a medical diagnosis of a sexual problem. So they might have been diagnosed with a problem by the doctor. There might not be particularly medical intervention that could help with that. So the doctor might suggest that they seek out psychosexual therapy.
Okay.
But you certainly don't have to have a medical diagnosis to benefit from psychosexual therapy. That's absolutely not necessary, because you know, we will help people with any type of sexual issues. And of course, a lot of those are not medical in the least.
Sure. So what kind of issues is it that you might be dealing with?
That's very, very varied. And there is no issue that we wouldn't deal with in a way. So I think one of the things that will hopefully reassure people is that you don't have to fall into a certain box before you're sort of allowed to have psychosexual therapy where you can benefit from it. If you feel that you have a difficulty in the arena of your sex life, whether that's individually or as a couple or in any other different kind of relationship that people might have, then you can benefit from psychosexual therapy. So, I mean, I'm happy to give some examples of issues, but I wouldn't want it to come across as an exclusive list, because if your issue is different to any of the ones I mentioned, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't get in touch with a psychosexual therapist. So issues that we see a lot is where there is a difference in, shall we say, the level of desire between members of a couple.
So does that mean one might want more sex than the other one?
Yes, exactly that. Yes, so that's very, very common. And it can create some really quite, you know, deep-rooted difficulties in the relationship if that carries on and is not addressed. And of course, it's a tricky problem. You know, it's a tricky problem because the person who has a higher level of desire would like to have sex more. The person who perhaps has a lower level of desire sort of becomes a little bit the gatekeeper to sex, in that they get to say whether yes, we will have sex, or no, we won't have sex.
All right, so more of a controlling kind of role in what happens sexually between them.
Well, that's right, and that's just not because they want to be controlling, but just by virtue of the fact that they have a lower level of need. for sex. But of course, with that then comes, you know, for the person with the higher level of desire, feelings of rejection quite often. Right. But for the person with lower level of desire, there can be a huge amount of guilt as well. So it's a very complex problem, and one that we can work with very effectively, and I'm happy to say more about that.
But is that where the relationship aspects of psychosexual and relationship therapy comes in?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the relationship aspects come in with any kind of issue that might be brought. So, because if you think about, you know, for most people, sex is an integral part of the relationship, including if you're not having sex, it's still a part of the relationship. It just means you have a relationship without sex. So whichever way you look at it, it's an integral part of the relationship. And there's a sort of, you know, this sort of two-way impact, really. So the sex life will impact on the quality of the wider relationship, but of course the quality of the wider relationship impacts on the sex.
So it can be sort of like the elephant in the room, perhaps, that that never gets talked about but is actually there, and perhaps doing, I don't know, I can imagine it could do quite a lot of damage on a relationship if it's a subject that isn't talked about, but there is an issue there perhaps.
No, absolutely, and I think that's one of the biggest problem, really, with sexual difficulties. I mean, sex is a very emotive subject, and by that I mean that it invokes strong feelings on the part of the people who are involved in it. And you can imagine there are other sort of emotive subjects in relationship, aren't there? For example, you know, how do we bring up the children, or how do we deal with our finances, or, you know, how do we deal with the extended family? There are other emotive subjects, but the big difference is that those are usually easier for people to talk about. Whereas when it comes to sex, because culturally there is still so much sort of shame, embarrassment and so on attached to sex, it becomes much more difficult for people to talk about. And so it tends to be the sexual issues that, like you say, become the elephant in the room, that are sort of there, they're quite often there for a long time, they don't get talked about because it's so hard to talk about, but they do start to undermine the quality of the relationship. There are other sort of issues that people bring, and again, it's not an exhaustive list, but things like, as well as differences in the level of desire, there might be differences in what people like.
Okay.
People's sexual preferences might be different, and they might not be very compatible, and that can create a huge amount of stress in the relationship. So that's something that sometimes people come and talk about. There can also be sort of problems where something doesn't quite work the way that it should do, that they want it to, or that it used to do. Mm. So you can imagine things like erections. So men having difficulty in either getting an erection, or once they start maintaining that erection, can create big problems for the man himself, and of course possibly for the relationship that he is in.
Yeah, I can imagine that's probably quite a bit of guilt that could come into that as well.
Yeah, it's just a very, it sort of goes to the heart of what it means to be a man, really, for a lot of men. And so when they start to experience difficulties in that area, it can really sort of affect their sense of self.
Okay, so when they feel about themselves, their self-esteem.
Yeah.
Perhaps does that then go into other areas of their life too?
Absolutely, yeah.
Self-esteem affects in every way, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It can really undermine their sense of self and their confidence in a much broader sense. And you know, and one of the problems is that for their partner, it might well feel as if they are not doing enough to arouse the man, or they're not somehow not attractive enough or desirable enough, which is, you know, not the case. But that's very often what the partner ends up feeling. And so it affects their self-esteem as well.
Yeah. Wow, that could really be tough in a relationship, couldn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really, really difficult. There's two things that tend to happen. The first thing is that the sex that the couple then do have tends to then revolve around that difficulty.
So they focus on the difficulty rather than on the enjoyment.
Yes,
perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah. They focus on the difficulty, and the sex becomes about, so say if we stick with the example of erectile difficulties for a moment, the sex might become focused on, okay, let's do what we need to do to get the erection. And then as soon as the erection is there, let's have penetrative sex because we've now got the erection.
Right.
And of course, what that does is it sets up a very sort of goal-orientated way of being sexual together. It takes away a huge amount of the enjoyment that both parties could have from other things that don't involve, you know, getting an erection or penetration.
Yeah.
And so the sex gets impoverished.
So that sounds as if sex then becomes filled with anxiety on both parts, actually. Yeah.
Absolutely. Very, very much anxiety. And one of the things we know about anxiety is that it interferes with the arousal process. So unfortunately it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that you know, the more anxiety there is, the less likely it is that there is satisfactory arousal.
So the more you worry about having an erection, the less likely you are to get one. Oh, that is awful, isn't it, really? What a situation.
It is. It's very painful. And the other thing that happens when there is a problem with sex is that it can lead to avoidance. So because there is so much anxiety, as you've just said, about, you know, will it work, and what am I going to feel like if it doesn't work? And maybe, you know, sometimes couples end up falling out if it doesn't work, or, you know, one of them might be very upset or sad or angry. And so what that then leads to is avoidance of sex, because no one wants to do something that's going to be riddled with anxiety. And then, of course, the longer they avoid sex, the harder it is to have another go at trying. And then over time, it can lead to a relationship where there is no sex.
So is it just the sex that people tend to avoid? Because I know sometimes in relationships, you can move in for a hug and you just want the hug. You don't want anything else to happen. And perhaps it moves on then to something more, to sex. But, you know, that it's that moving on from a hug or a touch or kind of just physical intimacy and then moving into sex. That is that because there's not a clear defining line between the two, are there? It can very easily just one becoming the other. So is there an anxiety there about even getting close in that way, just getting physically close, worrying that it might lead to more? Yeah.
No, you're absolutely spot on. And that's a very common problem. And that can be, if there's a sexual difficulty of any sort, it doesn't have to be something like erectile difficulties. It could be, for example, this difference in level of desire. But that scenario that you've just painted is a very common one, where there is an avoidance, not just of the sex itself, but actually of what I call the whole spectrum of intimacy. So if you start at one end of the spectrum of, I don't know, maybe holding hands or a peck on the cheek, and the other end of the spectrum is full sex, then there is a huge area in the middle where there can be lots of sort of intimacy at different levels. And what you find is that the point at which it stops gets pushed further and further and further and further over to this end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And then in the end, there is almost very little intimacy, very little physical intimacy. And it's something that we work with a lot in therapy, and something that is one of the things that brings about a huge amount of change in the couple's relationship, often very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that is when the couple start to recognize that actually, if they are both free to engage in whatever level of intimacy there is that they want to, and they're both free to say at any point along that spectrum, actually, I'm good now. That's me done. So there isn't this sense that, well, once you start, you've got to finish. You know, once you start getting a little bit,
all the way.
You've got to go all the way, and you mustn't get someone turned on if you're then not going to have sex with them, because that's not fair. And, you know, once we get rid of all of those myths and we start to free up the couple to just be able to have whatever level of intimacy they want at any given moment, it creates a big shift in the relationship quite often.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine.
And of course, the interesting thing about it is that if you create more opportunities for intimacy, knowing they don't have to lead to sex, then of course by doing that you do create the opportunity for arousal and desire to come, which then might lead to sex.
Oh, it's quite ironic, isn't it, to have to create that moment where you're not expecting it for it to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But I think, you know, and I think this is one of the difficulties with the idea of scheduling sex as well. Right. You know, I'm not surprised that people sort of balk at the idea and say, well, I don't want to schedule sex. That doesn't sound very very exciting or very sexy. And I think that's right, because in a way, how can you schedule sex? I mean, I don't know if I feel like having sex a week on Wednesday, 8 o'clock. I've no idea. So, but what you can do is make a commitment to have intimate time together.
Right. Okay.
You can do that.
And so it's not saying. So that would be part of therapy then, trying to figure out how it would work in a schedule, if you like, or planning time ahead. I also wonder whether that planning time ahead, it's actually something we do in a way when we first meet, when we first start dating. So we meet each other and we think about, oh, wow, what's going to happen the next time we meet? And we plan it in our head. What are we going to wear? What are we going to do? And I look forward to holding him or her in my arms and things like that. So in a way, we are preparing ourselves all the time for that moment. So this spontaneity that we rely on in relationships, I wonder how true that actually is and how realistic it is.
Yeah, no, I think you have a very good point there. So I tend to talk to my clients about it as the myth of spontaneous desire and spontaneous sex. Because what we know, and the research backs this up, is that in long-term relationships, actually, it's not spontaneous desire that sustains the sexual relationship. It is much more this commitment to making time to be intimate together, not scheduling sex, not saying, yes, I am going to have penetrative sex with you on Saturday night, but to actually make a commitment to have that intimate time together where something might happen. And if what happens is a cuddle and a kiss and a chat, then that's fine. But of course, sometimes it might lead to more. So to create the opportunity for that, because actually what sustains sex in a long-term relationship is this thing that we call responsive desire. Okay. So it's desire that comes in response to an element of stimulation.
Right.
So rather than imagining yourself, I don't know, standing up in the kitchen doing the washing up and this urge coming over you to, oh, I really want to have sex. I'm not saying that never happens.
Yeah.
But if you rely on that, if you wait for that, your likelihood is that in a long-term relationship, over time, and as you get older, you will have very, very little sex indeed. So what instead you need to do is create the opportunity where you're in a situation where there is some stimulation, there is some bodily contact, there is some kissing and touching. And then what we find is that mostly the desire will then come.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's really important. And a lot of people don't appreciate that. And so they think, well, we don't have a good sex life because we don't seem to want it anymore.
Yeah. So you create the situation to get the want going.
Exactly.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So is it difficult to get couples to the point of actually wanting to make that commitment, that appointment with each other, to just spend time, just have some intimate time together?
Well, I mean, bear in mind, when people come for psychosexual therapy, and we're talking about couples at the moment, we'll talk a little bit more about individuals later on, but when people make a commitment to come to psychosexual therapy, that is in effect the biggest commitment they have made to making their sexual relationship better, because it's a very, very brave and bold thing to do. And a lot of people will wait for a very long time and suffer for a very long time before they actually make the step of getting psychosexual therapy. So I think once they've made that commitment, and once they're sitting there with a stranger, maybe me, pouring their heart out, you know, sharing the most intimate aspects of their life with someone, the step then to start making some time and committing to that time is a relatively small one. compared to the big steps,
at that point, they will, to make an appointment with people like you, so a psychosexual relationship therapist,
yeah,
they will have had to have talked about what their issues are, I guess, or that there is an issue at least. So they'll have to have recognised that there's something there that they need help with.
Yes.
And I guess that's a huge step for people to take, if it is that sex has become something that you don't talk about, never mind doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really big step to do that. And actually couples will quite often come at the point that you just described as they know there's a problem. They haven't necessarily talked about it.
Right.
You see, one of the things that psychosexual therapy offers people is the opportunity to learn how to talk about sex.
Okay. Yeah.
But it is. There has to be just enough conversation that they can actually say to each other, "Do you know what? This ain't working, and we can't fix it." Yeah. And if that is all they've done by the time they come and see me, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
They don't need to have worked out exactly what the problem is, why they have the problem, what they would like to do about it, how they would like it to be. That exploration will happen in the therapy. I will guide them through that process.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're right. All they need to have been able to do is to recognise actually there is a problem and we probably need some help.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because I do wonder at what point people have to get to before they're willing to say, look, there's a problem, we can't fix it alone, but let's seek some help.
Hmm.
Rather than getting to the point of saying, look, this isn't working anymore, let's split. Perhaps it would be better with somebody else, you know.
Yeah, and of course we don't get to see those people, we don't get to see the people who make that decision. But we certainly do get to see couples who are on the verge of splitting up, who have considered splitting up, who are still thinking about maybe splitting up,
yeah,
who don't really hold out much hope that things can be better. So they come to therapy as a last resort. And, you know, in some cases, of course, what the couple come to therapy for isn't something that they do end up resolving and they do end up having to separate. And of course, therapy can help with that process.
Separating.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
But particularly so sexual.
A couple could go to therapy with an issue that they don't necessarily think is going to be solved in therapy, but they can go and explore it to see whether it can be resolved. And if it can't, then go through the process of emotionally, I guess, splitting up, because it's not the legal side, is it? So it would be the emotional detangling from each other.
Which is a really difficult thing to do.
We
can absolutely help with that. And I find, obviously, being a psychosexual and relationship therapist, if people come with very protracted relationship issues, then sometimes that is the outcome.
Right.
When a couple come with sexual issues, it's much less often the outcome. So sexual issues, although they might feel to the couple to be very intractable, something they've lived with for years, something they haven't been able to find a way through, therapy is actually very, very effective at helping them with those issues. So I'm not saying people never end up splitting up if they come with a sexual issue. But if you like, I mean, if we talk about it as a success rate, the success rate of sex therapy is really quite high.
Right. That's good news.
Mm.
So coming on to talking about individuals, you were saying that you also see it's not just couples, it's individuals too that you will see.
Yes.
So would that be the relationship bit in the psychosexual and relationship therapy as well as the psychosexual?
Individuals come to therapy for all sorts of reasons, of course. If they seek out a psychosexual therapist and or relationship therapist, it's usually because they feel the bulk of their issues or the main issue that they have is in that sort of an arena. So they might not seek me out, for example, if they are you know, suffering with anxiety or depression, although of course that often is the case anyway if they have these other issues. But so they usually do feel that their main difficulty lies in the area of sex and relationships, and that's why they would seek out a relationship or psychosexual therapist. And then in terms of the how individuals can benefit from psychosexual therapy. Now, some people might have a sexual issue and not actually be in a relationship, or they might have an alternative way of having relationships. So they may not be in a couple. They might, for example, engage in, you know, casual sexual encounters or have an alternative sort of approach to their sex life. And all of that can be worked with, and that's all absolutely fine. You don't have to be in a couple to come and do sex therapy. Mm. If someone is in a couple, in some sort of committed relationship, then it can be very, very helpful if both people in a couple come together. It doesn't have to be like that. And sometimes people come along and their partner doesn't want to come along. Yeah. Or sometimes people don't want their partner to come along. They want to do it on their own. And of course, we completely respect that and we work with that. But I do always try and encourage at least a conversation with the partner to say, would you consider coming together?
Yeah. So is that because of what you said earlier with the if one has a problem, then it affects the other and vice versa. And so there's an underlying perhaps interaction between the two that maybe needs to be looked at as alongside of the potential issues that there's potential sexual issues.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So what we find is that there's something can be happening between the partners that is actually helping to sustain the problem.
Okay. Yeah.
And so if we can only sort of work with one half of that relationship to try and fix the problem, but not with the other half, it might find that the solution, you know, it won't work as well.
Okay.
So that's the sort of main reason. But the other thing is, even if the partner isn't part of the problem, they can be part of the solution.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, and that's very important. So sometimes people feel like, well, hey, look, I've never had any sexual issues in my other relationships. It's the first time I've been with someone who has this problem. Therefore, it's nothing to do with me. And you know, they might be right. But actually, if they do come along, they can be part of what makes it better. They can be part of the solution. If the partner doesn't want to come along, or the individual doesn't want the partner to come along, which is also quite common, then at least we want to try and make sure that the partner is supportive.
Right. So the partner needs to know that they're there, that they're going to psychosexual therapy.
Again, ideally.
Yeah. But not always. It can happen without them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can imagine perhaps sometimes people feel incredibly intimidated at the thought of actually admitting that there is something that they need to work with, and to say to their partner, look, I'm going to go and do this could be really tricky. Mm. I guess
yes, although the partner will of course almost invariably be aware of the problem.
Yeah.
So it's perhaps not as much as difficult to sort of admit that as you might imagine. In the majority of cases, I find where individuals who are in a couple relationship come along for therapy, their partner does know.
Okay.
But either the partner doesn't want to be part of it, or they don't want the partner to be part of it. But whilst we can work with that, as I said, ideally I would have the couple there, and I always invite them to think about coming together. If that can't be the case, it is important the partner is supportive. And part of the reason for that is because psychosexual therapy involves homework.
Okay. Right.
So, yeah.
What kind of homework would that be?
So to begin with, it's very often individual homework. So it can be focusing on the person's sort of relationship, if you like, with their own body, with their own sexuality. And because, of course, that's what we bring into a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
Because we bring our relationship with ourselves and with our own sexuality into that relationship. And sometimes there's work to be done there. So it might be individual exercises. It's very broad, you know, the sort of homework is very broad. So it might be reading a book, for example.
Okay.
You know, we would recommend certain things that people might read, depending on what it is that they're struggling with. We might direct them towards an app. There's some very helpful apps out there these days, podcasts they might listen to. But they might also do homework that sort of involves more practical things, like learning to do relaxation exercises, for example, being able to, you know, engage with mindfulness, which again, there's great apps for that. So there might be things that they need to do to help themselves get in a more relaxed and more mindful state so they can actually engage with the feelings that sex brings.
So the exercises are not necessarily focused on sex. It's more about our state of mind and so getting turning down the anxiety, I guess, and getting to know yourself better.
So that's always where we would start, really.
It sounds quite nice, really, doesn't it, when you're thinking of it?
Well, and people do find it nice. They enjoy it. Yeah. But then we do, depending on what the issue is, and as I said, there's so many varied issues, but we do then move on to exercises, homework exercises, where there might be more sexual aspect to it.
Okay.
So there might be exercises where people sort of learn to be more comfortable with touching their own body, for example, or just learn to be more comfortable with actually being with their body, looking at their body, being able to be naked, for example. And then all the way to very targeted exercises that might help with certain sexual issues. So, for example, we have very specific exercises that if a man, for example, does have difficulties with an erection, there's very specific exercises we can do with that. The same for things like premature ejaculation, but also for women who might be suffering with pain on penetration. Again, very specific exercises that we can set to help with that. You know, women who perhaps haven't been able to orgasm, again, very specific exercises we can set for that. So this is all done in the privacy and comfort of your own home. There is
sessions.
I have heard the misconception that somehow they were going to be doing this in the sessions. Clearly that is not the case. The homework will always be done in the privacy of their own home. But then the idea is that they come back to the next session and that we talk about how that was for them.
Okay.
And how did it go? And what did they find out about themselves from it? And actually, maybe what's been difficult about it? And what obstacles did they perhaps find along the way? Because that is the feedback that we learn from, we understand, and then we can sort of go take the next step to say, okay, so that was quite difficult. So let's think about that. And what could we do to try and help with that?
Yeah.
And so the feedback is really important, but the homework exercises are always, you know, done privately at the client's pace.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't say this is what you need to do this week and this is how often and this is for how long.
Yeah. So I might recommend, but we would always do that in consultation with the clients.
Right. So it's kind of an agreement in the session then.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's an explicit sort of agreement for every step of the therapy.
Yeah.
And if I sort of say to the client, well, look, I think maybe this would be a really great next step for you. And I might explain what it is that I think they would be doing and why I think that would be helpful. And then I check with them. And sometimes they sort of say, oh, no, I don't think that's not going to work for me, or I don't feel ready for that. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. Then we'll adapt, we'll amend, we'll take a step back, we'll slow it down. So that's what I mean about going at the client's pace. So it's not that I don't have ideas about how I think it should progress and what would be helpful for them. But we never push, we never force, we never cajole. And if people can't do certain things that I might think would have been helpful for them, sometimes it can be for religious reasons, for example, then we'll find a workaround.
Okay.
So we go with the
what
client.
If there is a complete block or hurdle that people find really difficult to get over?
Yeah.
What would happen then?
Yeah. Do you have anything specific in mind? I mean, I have got some examples, but
well, I'm thinking perhaps about what can I think of? So women very often have very negative ideas about themselves and how they look physically, especially when they get older, and also how they, if you like, perform sex. If that's a hurdle that's stopping people from moving on with the exercises that you've been talking about there, because I can imagine then if it comes to a point where they've got to start becoming more physically intimate with their partner, it, those kind of things could stop them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I tend to think that if there is a block, if we hit a sort of roadblock, then there is something that we haven't worked through properly, that we haven't understood properly. So at that point, I would suggest that we take a step back and that we go back to seeing what is it that's stopping us moving forward, and what is it that we haven't yet understood or worked through, and how can we work with that? And sometimes it means taking a bit of a pause and, you know, doing some work sort of slightly off to the side to try and progress that. Occasionally we come up against things we just have to work around. So if, for example, you know, an exercise might call for the couple to be doing some touching together, if you like, that would, you know, normally require them to be naked together. If that isn't workable for a particular couple in a particular situation, we work around it.
Right, okay. So what would you then do, exercises with clothes on, or
absolutely not
do it at all? No, you do it with clothes on.
Yeah, clothes on. So we find a workaround. Yeah. So what we try not to do is to say, well, we're not going to do it at all. If you can't do it like that, we're not going to do it.
Right.
I don't work like that.
Yeah.
So instead, we'll try and find a workaround. What will work for this particular client? Because everyone's unique, and that's why, although we have, of course, you know, learned a model of working with some of these issues, which is based on years and years of research.
Right.
So we haven't just made it up. But nonetheless, that doesn't become a prescriptive program. Mm. You know, we have to work with the individual and what works for the individual, what works for the couple.
Right.
And that's the most interesting and important part of the therapy, actually.
Right.
I think if we just rolled out a standard process, anyone could do it.
Yeah.
But actually, we need to work really sensitively with each individual and their needs.
So that there might be an idea of what could happen regarding homework, but it sounds like it's more to do with what it is that happens when that homework is, when couples do that homework and then bring in to start talking about what it is that happens. And so that's the bit, that's the therapy then, is it?
Well, it's certainly a big part of the therapy.
Yeah.
It's the interaction between the doing and the talking about the doing. And people are often a little bit apprehensive about the idea of homework, and, you know, particularly when there hasn't been, for example, any sexual intimacy or any satisfactory sexual intimacy for a long time. The idea that they might become intimate again together, although of course that's partly what's wanted, it can also be very scary. So just to reassure people on that front, really, that we build up to it very, very slowly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
so building up to it, what would be the more of the self-focused exercises then?
So the individual work.
Or perhaps talking more as a couple in therapy about, with you or somebody like you, about what it is that's going on for them, the thoughts and what happens when certain things, when they have a cuddle, for example, or or just a kiss goodbye or hello or say goodnight to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So we explore, and the first few sessions are really all about that. So the first few sessions, we wouldn't normally set homework. You know, we would just be exploring. We would just help the couple to actually get to the point where they can say what it is that they're struggling with, and I would help them, and my colleagues would do the same. We help people to try and get them to the point where they do feel able to say what the issues are. We facilitate a dialogue between them about those issues. We ask questions to explore the why, the when, the how. And then we also, as psychosexual therapists, we're quite active. So we will give some feedback at the end of the first few sessions and say, do you know what, I've been thinking about everything that you've told me, and I wonder if this is sort of what's been going on, and maybe if this is why.
Yeah.
And then we check that out with the clients, and the clients might say, yeah, that is right. Or they might say, no, it's not quite like that. And so together then we form a view, we form a sort of view of, okay, this is what the issues are, these are what the issues are, we understand why these issues have occurred, we know what's keeping them going, i.e. why the problem is still there. And actually, we also are going to agree what we would like to do about it. So, you know, what are our goals, if you like, for the therapy?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it isn't the same for everyone. You know, for some people, it might be to be able to have penetrative sex again when they haven't been able to have that. For other people, that might not be a goal at all. It might be a very different kind of goal. So it's completely up to the individual and the couple what the goals are. But we agree those goals. And then we sort of start the treatment. So then we start very gently with some homework exercises initially for individuals. Yeah. If it is a couple, we might set some exercises around perhaps having some eye contact together, doing some hugs together. So, you know, there are lots of different ways. Doing some reading a book and maybe both reading a chapter and then talking about it. So we don't start off with, okay, well, now we want you to go home and get naked. And
we don't
start there.
It's exploring different ways of connecting then, isn't it, with the eye contact.
Exactly.
Reading together and talking.
Yeah.
And learning to talk in the sessions with you, I guess, teaches them to talk with each other at home as well.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we often get at the end of the therapy when we sort of review with the couple or the individual, but we take it in this case with a couple, what the therapy's brought them.
Right.
You know, one of the things that they almost always say is, well, we can now talk about sex.
Excellent.
Yes. And no one can take that away from them, you see.
No.
Once they're able to do that, they've got that. And then when another issue crops up a little bit further down the line, because, you know, we all know that as we age, you know, life changes, children being born, children leaving home, menopause, illness, diabetes, you know, all of these things have an impact on our sex life. So that then as and when the couple hit another sort of obstacle in the road where there is an impact on their sex life, they can now talk about it.
And of course, that's another way of being intimate, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes, how wonderful.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is the biggest sort of gift, I think, that the therapy gives them, is the ability to talk to each other about it and to feel okay about doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. So as a psychosexual and relationship therapist, what kind of training do you have to go through?
Quite a lot. I personally started by training to become a couples therapist. So that's a 3-year part-time training. I did my training with an organisation called Tavistock Relationships, which is based in London. It's an organisation that for over 70 years now has been doing research, training and clinical work around working with couples, so they know a thing or two about it. So that's to become specialised in working with relationships and being able to do therapy with couples, which is actually quite difficult. It is difficult sometimes. What I meant to say is it's quite different to doing therapy with individuals. And so therefore, I think if you're going to work with couples, or if you are a client looking for a therapist, it's really important to look for someone who has done a specific couple training.
I can imagine it would be very difficult because you've got two people in the room, haven't you? But whether with individual therapy, it is one person. So
yeah.
You haven't the relationship dynamic to work with as well, and everything that holds. And it's two different stories, really, isn't it? Two different people, two different stories, two different sets of beliefs and everything else that comes with who we are as people.
Yes, absolutely. It's very complex.
And
it's very important to be able to do it well, to be able to hold, you know, both of the individuals and their needs and feelings, as well as being able to hold in mind always the fact that your client, if you like, is the relationship, not the individual people.
Right.
And it's a very different way of doing therapy to having therapy with an individual. So that was my, you know, first training. And then after I worked with couples for a while, I realised that, of course, sex comes into the consulting room, as it should do. And sex is a big part of most people's relationships, as I said, whether they're having sex or not having sex, it's still a big part of the relationship. Yeah. And so then I felt that I wanted more specialised knowledge and skills and tools to be able to work with the sexual relationship. So I then did a further 2-year training in sex therapy, again with Tavistock relationships.
And was that part-time too, or is that full-time?
No, that's part-time too.
Yeah.
Part-time master's.
Yeah. Well, it's a master's then. So were both courses master's?
So one was a postgrad diploma and the other one was a master's.
Okay.
But it doesn't really matter. I mean, that's not really what matters. What matters is that you get a therapist who's done a really good quality specialised training in couples therapy if you want to come as a couple. And if you want to be able to get help with sexual issues, that they have a qualification in psychosexual therapy. And one way to check that is by you know, going to the professional registers to see whether they are registered with an organization. For example, there's an organization called COSRAD which specializes in psychosexual therapists. So if they're on the register there, then you know, you can know that they are a qualified psychosexual therapist.
I'll include the link to COSRAD under here. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. So that was my training. So that's it is quite a rigorous training, and I think it should be. And when you're dealing with sexual issues as well, you have to not only be able to work with psychological issues, be able to work with the relationship, be able to have good counselling skills, because you need that for any kind of therapy. But you actually also need to really understand sexual functioning. You know, you need to have an in-depth knowledge of how the body works when it comes to sex. You know, what kind of things can go wrong with sexual functioning at a body sort of level.
At a physical level.
At a physical level, how, you know, illnesses might impact, how medication might impact. Because also you need to be sometimes refer people to medical attention. You know, it does happen. People might come to a psychosexual therapist as a first port of call, for example, with something like erectile difficulties. But actually, you know, if they haven't been checked out by a doctor, I would send them to a GP.
Okay. Would you then send everybody to a GP, or
depending on
what it is that they present with?
Exactly. So if it's, I don't know, say if it's a young person, and we do get a lot of young people, actually. I think this is maybe another misconception that only older people or people in long-term relationships have sexual difficulties. It's not the case. We get a lot of young people.
Yeah.
But if, for example, I have a young man who, you know, his sort of spontaneous erections are absolutely fine. You know, the morning erections, spontaneous erections, erections whilst masturbating, if they're all absolutely fine, but the difficulty comes in sustaining an erection with, say, his partner, then that wouldn't, for me, ring bells that it's a medical issue.
Right, okay.
Whereas if it's maybe someone who has difficulties with erections across the board, whose erections are not as good as they used to be, or perhaps can't get the erection, can't maintain the erection, it could be a sign of something physically going wrong in the body.
Right. Yeah.
For example, some cardiovascular issues.
Right. Okay.
So in that case, I would send them to the doctor.
So that becomes quite important, doesn't it, to go to the doctor and be checked out?
Very important, yes. And I wouldn't start working with them until they have been to the doctor and they've had the relevant tests and I've been reassured that there isn't a medical issue that needs attention. And the same if women present with pain on penetration, for example. It's really important to get that checked out because there can be a physical cause.
Right, yeah.
And even if it turns out that, yes, there is a physical cause, it doesn't mean psychosexual therapy can't help, because often it can. But the physical cause needs to at least be diagnosed and, if appropriate, treated.
Sure, yeah.
So we work very, you know, so we're very mindful of that you know, we are dealing with people's bodies and it's not going to be all in the mind. That's not
really right. Yeah, it's quite a big thing to work not just with the mind but with the body too, and then you've got a relationship in that as well. So there's a lot going on. I can see why you need a pretty good education to really be able to do a nice and wholesome job with people.
Absolutely. You know, people entrust you with their most sort of intimate difficulties that go right to the heart of their relationship.
And it's a place where you feel vulnerable, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, very much so. So they deserve to be doing that with people who are appropriately qualified. And it's not always that easy to find people.
Are there not many of you out there then?
Probably not enough, no. Right. So, yes, I'm involved in training a new generation of psychosexual therapists, which is very satisfying work because I know there's so much need out there. So it's wonderful to get more people qualified. But also it can be quite hard to find people because we all tend to be on these big directories, you know, like the counselling directory and the BACP directory. But to find amongst, you know, these thousands of therapists, the one that's got the right qualifications and experience can be really hard for clients.
I guess it's difficult. There's so many qualifications out there and so many therapists, I guess, talking about what it is that they do, that it can be very confusing. But I guess with COSRAT being the organisation, as you say, for psychosexual, is that right, for psychosexual therapists?
So it's definitely a good place to start. Something else that my colleague Andrew and I did is to set up a website for psychosexual therapy, which actually allows people to access in one go a number of different psychosexual therapists in different parts of the country.
Oh, wonderful. We'll include that link too.
It's called Revive. And we have therapists who all have had the same training, so people can really know that there is a certain sort of level there of.
So they've all had the same training as you. Excellent.
And that's growing at the moment, but it's like a one stop shop really, rather than having to say, I'm based in, I don't know, London, and I don't know where to start to find a psychosexual therapist. To be able to come to that website and say, okay, here's someone who's, you know, local to me or who works online and I want to work online. So that's why we did that. We're really trying to make it more accessible. And because it is a huge step.
It is a huge step. And like you say, I can imagine there's probably quite a few people out there who could benefit from it, but perhaps they don't know that it even exists, or they don't know that it's a specialised area, perhaps.
Or they might think that, oh gosh, my problem is not serious enough, you know. That's only for people who have real difficulties, and that's why I'm sort of, although I talked about specific issues, for example erectile dysfunction, because it is quite a common one, but I almost don't want to do that because it might make other people think, well, gosh, I don't have anything like physically wrong. Everything works fine. So I shouldn't need psychosexual therapy. I really want to stress that if you are in any way not happy with your sex life, whether that's you as an individual and the way that you have your sex life, or whether that's you as part of a couple, then psychosexual therapy can help. You don't need to have a big problem or a physical problem or anything like that to be able to benefit.
Just a last question for you. Have you got any suggestions? One simple suggestion for people who've been listening to you and really would like to get in contact with somebody but have never experienced therapy before. What's the one piece of advice that could make a difference?
I'm not sure I can reduce it down to one thing, but I think the first thing I would say is be brave. You know, do it. I think what's really helpful is to have a read maybe of a few people's profiles, a few therapist profiles, and maybe pick one or two, maybe three, that you think, gosh, they sound like the sort of person I could I could perhaps talk to.
Yeah.
They appeal to me in some way, because I think that's really important. And then maybe, you know, drop them an email and ask to have a quick chat on the phone.
Right.
Because I think that can be very, very helpful. So
making that connection and having an actual chat on the phone, even if it is that they don't know exactly what it is that's wrong or what they want. Or
Yeah. Absolutely. And any good therapist will be very happy to arrange to have a telephone chat before setting up any initial meeting or anything like that, just a chat on the phone. And that will often be the first time that someone actually articulates, you know, actually says, this is what's happening for me. And then you can, you know, as the client, you can see, is this therapist someone that was easy to say to? Did this therapist make it easy for me to say that? You know, did I feel that their response was helpful, constructive, sympathetic? Do I feel like this is, you know, I could talk some more to this person about it? And if the answer is yes, then book your appointment and get going.
Yeah. So if the conversation kind of flows, then
Exactly. And you'll know if you know, it is going to feel awkward. I mean, it's never going to feel easy to start talking about something like that. But a good therapist should make it easier for you and should help you feel that actually this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
So that would be, I think, my one hot tip is to, you know, choose two or three that you think, yeah, they look good based on their profile, then arrange to have a chat on the phone and go with the one that you feel most comfortable with.
Brilliant. Thank you, Albertina. That was really, really interesting and incredibly informative. Thank you for joining us here.
Thank you.
And I hope everybody has gained from, I'm sure they will have, from what you said.
Yes, if it just helps to make it a bit more accessible and to take some of the mystique out of it and the fear out of it.
Very reassuring.
Give it a go.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Albertina. I certainly did. If you want to know more about her practice and the websites she mentioned, please see below where you should find the relevant links. If you would like to be certain to listen to the next episode, please feel free to subscribe. You've been listening to The Talking Space with Corinne Black.